Hello and a warm welcome to Diversity Network's Inclusion Podcast, bringing you the very latest on diversity, inclusion and equity in the workplace. Diversity Network is a passionate community of like-minded business professionals from around the world dedicated to DE&I and quite simply making work life better. You can find out more and join in our regular online events at diversity-network.com. On the podcast today, why workers are hiding fertility issues and what to do about it. Did you know that there are more than 3.5 million people in the UK currently experiencing fertility problems, and the majority of them are in employment? However, a survey conducted by Fertility Network UK in 2021, looking at the mental health impact of fertility treatment on workplace performance and job satisfaction, found companies sadly lacking in their support for those undergoing fertility treatment. So in this podcast, we speak to Anya Sizer from Fertility Network UK to discuss their findings and to discover why most people experiencing fertility problems are still reluctant to speak to their employer. Now, Anya's role is actually heading up a subdivision within Fertility Network UK, which is entitled Fertility in the Workplace, specifically looking at this very often difficult and sensitive subject from both a well-being perspective, also a rights perspective as well. So over this next half an hour or so, we'll be talking about how the employee might be able to navigate through their own fertility journey with the full backing of their organisation behind them. Fertility Network UK have been doing quite a lot of polling of members to find out general levels of awareness and response within the organisation surrounding fertility. I'd just like to read out to the audience as we start our conversation a few of the statistics that you found in your survey in 2021, because I think it's quite interesting and probably representative of other countries too, not just the UK. They found, in fact, that over a third of employees undergoing fertility treatment have considered leaving their jobs. Half, or over half, 56% in fact, have also experienced decreased job satisfaction while they've been trying to conceive. A third have had to take increased sickness absence. Two-thirds, 63% of respondents reported reduced engagement at work, and one in five people, in fact, didn't inform their employer in any way that they were having any fertility treatment. Nearly two-thirds of people actually felt the need to hide the real reason for taking time off for appointments and fertility-related illness. There's quite an issue there, which would be really good to unpack. About trust in your organisation. Would you feel willing to disclose that you are undergoing a fertility journey yourself within your own organisation? And from the employer's perspective, how can one deal with that with the best will in the world if you want to help, but you don't actually know what your employees are going through? It's very difficult to change the way in which your business is reacting and responding. So, Anya, great to have you with us. What are your thoughts, just listening to those statistics? How on earth have we got ourselves into this position within the workplace? Is this typical? And is this something that you're seeing starting to naturally change? Or are we in a bit of a rut?
I actually feel quite hopeful in terms of where we're at with workplace initiatives and better support within a workplace for people facing infertility. I think we've still got a long way to go. I think that it's still a difficult topic a lot of the time to talk about. However, I do think I see real change within the workplace. And I think we're seeing increasing numbers of workplaces and organisations, companies contacting us and saying they're really aware of how many people need support and how can they do that and reaching out to us for that help. So I sort of feel hopeful actually at the moment. I think we've got a long way to go, but I think I feel very hopeful about the trajectory of where we're going.
That's great. I mean, certainly we're seeing that diversity, equity, and inclusion are coming much more into the fore now, hence the growth of Diversity Network in this last couple of years. And perhaps that then is part of it. People are beginning to think we have to meet employees where they are at and serve them better. It helps with the company's performance as well in the end. So everybody benefits because obviously a happy employee is going to be a lot more beneficial for the company than somebody who's really struggling there. So it's great that well-being is being increasingly taken into account more than historically, perhaps. But it's a very difficult issue, isn't it? Particularly this one, because often it's a very private issue. You don't necessarily want the entire department to know about your current journey. What would your best advice be to employers on how to broach the subject and make sure that employees know that they are there to help, either as a sounding board or to adjust schedules or whatever, help to make space for any hospital appointments and things like that that might be needed, and really raise that level of trust so that employees are much more willing to come forward than the figures suggest are happening at the moment?
Yeah, so I think it's two pronged. I think it starts with having that whole workplace change of focus so that you are fertility friendly, so that you are there as an organization known to be supportive of people facing infertility. So right from the start, there's policies in place, ideally. There's a culture which is aware of the need for flexible working, for compassionate working, so that you've got that workplace change of culture. But then it's also very much in terms of how a manager best supports an individual. It's really about listening to what the individual needs, because one person's concept of support is often very different to another's. So it's very easy for all of us to think, right, I know how best to support this person in front of me. But actually, what we need to do is check in with them. So it's two pronged. It's getting that cultural shift, but then it's also about speaking to the individual in front of you and saying, what does support look like to you? How can we, as an organization, best support you going forward?
That's great. And I know that you yourself work with lots of different types of companies at the moment towards doing exactly that. So tell us a little bit about the services that you currently offer.
Yeah, really proud of the work that we do. As I said, it's really grown massively the last few years. And there's no such thing as one size fits all. We try and listen to the organisation in front of us and say, look, that's where you're at the moment. Where do you want to be headed? What are the steps that will facilitate that? And it starts with that. A lot of the work that we do, a lot of the focus is around training. So we call them lunch and learns. So we will do an hour session with all staff, looking at the reality and some of the myths and realities of infertility, some of the realities of going through treatment within a workplace, picking up on some of the survey responses that we've had, as you mentioned previously, and really just trying to embed that cultural shift. So doing some training with all staff. And from there, we often do training for managers specifically, mental health first aiders specifically. And then with some organizations, we've worked with them for over 2 years now, and we'll just pick up as and when needed with specific aspects of infertility awareness that they've asked for. So, for example, we'll do those initial training sessions, and maybe they'll then say, we'd really like to look at fertility preservation. Or we'd really like to look at the role of the LGBT community and how we best support there. Or we want to look at what happens when fertility treatment doesn't work. And so it's really important that we listen to the organisation and we act accordingly with what they need.
From your side, are we seeing a general change beginning in terms of the legal responsibilities of the employer to offer, for example, compassionate leave where needed in the case of losses and things like that? Is this something that you're seeing is coming to the fore much more than historically, or are we just more aware of it now, because we're thinking more about these human issues at work?
I think more places are putting a policy in place. And once you've got a policy in place, there's something really tangible that people can turn to and say, look, this is what we're entitled to. And actually, that's good for management, and for employees. So it's really good all round if something robust is in place. So it's not about an ad hoc conversation between a manager and an employee, which is, you know, too difficult to be constantly trying to navigate for both parties. Much better to have something in place. And actually, we are seeing that increasingly. Most people that come to us for training are looking to get a policy in place. And once you've got that, once you've got that internal training and cultural shift and cultural awareness training, actually, I think you're on really solid foundation for being able to be as welcoming and supportive as possible for your staff. So I'm hopeful. I do see real seeds of hope with this.
That's great. I mean, it's fantastic that you're quite optimistic in terms of change occurring there and positive about, you know, what you're seeing out there at various different companies. I wonder, from the individual's perspective, if you are going through fertility treatment, for example, and trying to navigate the workplace and make sure that direct colleagues don't find out about it because you're worried that it might somehow impact your job opportunities surrounding the role that you're currently in, if you reveal that possibly you might be on parental leave in a year's time or something like that. What's the best way to navigate that from the individual's perspective? Should they feel more confident about coming forward, or are they right to be a little bit more cautious? Do you think there is a link there between them divulging, perhaps oversharing a little bit too much information about their fertility journey, and then employers suddenly, colleagues suddenly getting the wrong idea and, you know, cutting them off from opportunities that may otherwise be presented to them?
Well, it's totally understandable that they'd feel like that. This is a sensitive topic. It's not one that people always want to share. And unfortunately, some of our research does show that there is a correlation between revealing to line managers, revealing to your place of work that you're about to go through treatment, and at worst, career progression being affected by that. We do sometimes see a correlation between that, and historically that has been the case for certain. However, I think that is improving, and I think some of this goes back to that cultural shift that I mentioned, that one of the myths about fertility problems is that this is about a lifestyle choice, and that people are sort of choosing to do IVF, they're wanting to go down a fertility treatment route. But actually, the shift there for us when we go in and do the training is that this is not a lifestyle issue. This is a medical condition. And the World Health Organization actually defines infertility as a disease of the reproductive system. So when you have that focus, when you have that sort of perspective shift, it really does help actually with those conversations. If you go to your line manager as someone with a lifestyle choice that you're wanting to do IVF and this is up to you, that's very different from someone presenting and saying, actually, this is a medical necessity, in the same way that many other medical conditions are, and therefore I need support in the workplace to work to the best of my ability. If you can have that mentality shift, both as employee and employer, actually, those conversations become easier because there's an entitlement and a right to discuss these things. And I think that's why the training is so important. If you just bring in a policy and say, right, we're providing a policy to support our staff, that's a great start, but you really need to address why that policy matters. So you need the hand in hand, you need the training and the policy support in order to get the best for employers and employees.
Yes, of course. And thinking about the way in which this whole topic is broached within the organisation, it's really important that it's not just one individual who is responsible, isn't it, within the company?
Yeah, yeah.
Because if they're suddenly not around or they leave the organisation, you're back to square one, aren't you? So that education element must be much more widespread.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I'm always really impressed that generally these conversations occur because there's one brave person within a workplace that finally says, I've had this experience, it's not working, we need to shift the narrative internally. And actually, that brave person then has such a massive ripple effect, and we get people putting their hands up and saying, yes, we've had treatment as well. I've been through 6 years of fertility treatment. I've had miscarriages. But it often starts with one person, but it can't be based on one person. You're absolutely right. It has to be based on an internal shift, internal cultural shift, and then policies put in place and best practice. So looking at reasonable adjustments within the workplace, what's needed to make this place as fertility friendly as possible. So things like looking at flexible working as standard, not as something quirky that people have to fight for, but actually that's within the workplace thinking. Looking at things like, if someone is going through fertility treatment, what have we got for them so that if they need to be doing self-injecting during the day, during work hours, where can they go and do that? So some of these practical ramifications need to be looked at. And this all starts with the culture shift. It all starts with saying, this matters. You know, fertility support at work is crucial. Now, how can we make that work? And as you mentioned before, this is not just about individuals. It's not just about the staff. This is about making sure your workplace is as productive as possible. You know, one of the feedback that we found from the survey we did with Middlesex University all those years ago was, if you don't get this right, people will turn up to work at best and muddle through. And the phrase that came up again and again was presenteeism, that they could just about muddle through, but they certainly weren't working at capacity. But at worst, we're talking about long-term absence, long-term leave, and at absolute worst, people leaving. Now, staff retention is crucial to an organization. And if you think that 1 in 6 minimum of any workforce is going to be facing some form of fertility treatment, it really is in everyone's best interest and in the interest of the company to really get this right. So it's not just about individuals even, it's about how can we keep organisations going.
That's such a huge percentage, 1 in 6, isn't it? Really, it's amazing that it's been as quiet as it has been with work culture for as long as it has. But it's great if you're seeing that that's starting to change. And also there's quite a lot of comfort from actually finding out that you're not the only one, I imagine, if you're going through that. So how might the organisations be able to support employees internally in terms of forming groups such as employee resource groups around these issues? Are you seeing a lot of that now beginning?
So there's different models of that we're seeing. Most workplaces, I have to say, don't do things like an internal support group, for example. I have seen that happen and happen successfully. There tends to be different models if they're looking at internal support. So sometimes some peer support, sometimes they have a system where there's a named person that will own this. Sometimes having the mental health first aiders owning the fertility supports label as well, so that they know that they can go to specific people. So internally, there can be different levels of support, you know, peer to peer. But actually, a lot of the time, people are referred on to external support structures. So using fertility network support groups, which are free and online, using other organisations. And that's where upskilling management, really giving them training and helping them to know who to point to is really important as well. So that it's not just about managers trying to work out how to best internally support their team, but they know, for example, when someone comes to them and they're about to start donor conception treatment, and they know that's a route they're going down, they think, yes, there's the donor conception network, I can refer on. If they know they've got a team member who sadly has faced a miscarriage or numerous losses, they think, right, there's the Miscarriage Association, or SANS. And obviously Fertility Network is that umbrella organisation nationally. We can always signpost as well. So I think there's a lot that can be done internally, but actually sometimes it's fine to be referring on to other people as well. It's just knowing what levels of support are needed and how to do that.
That's a very good point, because if you want to keep your own circumstance relatively private within the organisation, perhaps being signposted to somewhere external where you can get support is then, you know, the right thing to do. So having that signposting ability is really important. You mentioned flexible working also being something which is hugely beneficial. And as we are now coming out of the pandemic and flexible working is becoming much more commonplace than it was 5-10 years ago, I guess that will be of real help to people. So are you seeing that that is really beginning to start having an effect?
Yeah, I mean, flexible working is one of the key things that we always recommend. There is nothing like going through fertility treatment for having a hugely disrupted schedule. You know, there's clinic appointments and then the clinic appointments get changed at the last minute, or you're called in at the last minute, or, you know, there's no such thing as a standard IVF cycle. And so flexible working and the understanding about why that matters is really important. And I absolutely agree. I think the pandemic's been the worst of times by far, but there's been glimmers of good things that have come out of it. One of which is a rethinking about work life and, you know, the ability to work from home for many people. I think that's opened up huge amounts of possibilities. For example, the clinics themselves, the fertility clinics, are actually currently doing a lot of their meetings with patients via Zoom, via online platforms, and actually finding that they're really, really helpful. So rather than a patient having to travel all the time and very last minute for certain parts of their treatments, actually they can do that remotely. And the good news about that is that it will help with their own ability to be more flexible for work. So I think the framework needs to be there. I think the understanding that this is the norm, this is not the person in front of you being difficult and flaky. It's the opposite of that, that you'll have a staff member who will want to work to the best of their ability if these things are in place as standard. And for us as a charity, flexible working and compassionate support, I would say, are the two key things that are needed for any workplace to help their staff.
Which, of course, is the essence of inclusion, which is really, you know, what DE&I is all about, isn't it? Really, meeting people where they're at and enabling them to bring their whole selves into the workplace as they feel secure in being able to do that. And I just also would like to mention about another survey which you've done in the past, which found that a lot of people were concerned with the stigma that infertility can bring with it, I guess, within society, but particularly within the workplace as well. Are you still seeing that that is something that people are very concerned about, and that it is really impacting people's well-being as they are going through their fertility journeys?
Yeah, again, it's hard for me to say sometimes, because I'm so embedded in the world of fertility that sometimes I think my perception might be slightly off. But I think that it's still a difficult subject. I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about it. I think it's less of a taboo. It used to be referred to as this huge taboo. I think it's less of a taboo these days, but it's still a difficult conversation a lot of the time. It's still delicate. And that comprehension of myths and reality, and people thinking they know what infertility is like and thinking they know what fertility treatment is like, actually that's the bigger barrier that we find these days. So less of the whole subject is off limits, and more of a manager's potentially thinking, oh, this is a lifestyle choice, this is quite simplistic, this is a short-term thing. So, you know, when you think that the average IVF cycle can easily last around 6 weeks, most managers don't realize that unless they've been through it themselves. And so maybe the comprehension, if they've got someone standing before them saying, oh, I'm about to do IVF, is that maybe it'll last a few days, a week, rather than 6 weeks, of monitoring and clinic appointments and highs and lows and medical intervention. You know, I think that's the bigger issue now, is separating what people think they know about infertility from the reality and the lived experience. And one of the key things with that is helping all managers to really understand the emotional impact that going through infertility can have on a person. So one of our key surveys a few years back found that about 90% of people with long-term infertility issues experience depression, and about 42% of that group actually experience suicidal tendencies. So we're talking about an issue that really, really can affect people very, very deeply. It can affect people on every level in terms of relationships, in terms of self-worth, financially. So many aspects are hit by going through infertility. And it's no surprise to us that there's that high 90% depression rate. But it's really important that all workplaces are aware of the potential huge, huge impact that this can have on an individual.
Absolutely. And presumably the feelings of isolation that it can bring on as well, even if that isn't actually the case, that they may be feeling that they are the only one and, you know, got to keep it all secret and all of that. That's a tremendous burden.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, in the workplace, it's just starting to readjust that internal lens of how you look around a workplace and thinking, actually, sometimes that isolation is exacerbated by a workplace culture. So the revealing of baby scans via an email, bring your child to work day, bring your daughter and son to work day. Mother's Day is coming up. Isn't that fantastic? Christmas, we'll do an email round with a picture of children and things. It's just that sensitivity of starting to realize, actually, this can really crush a person at work. And what can we do? What can we do to make that a little bit easier? So it's that, again, it's that cultural shift and the realization that this is very common, but really can be hugely detrimental to a person. Now, I don't want to paint that across the board. Some people find it much easier than others. Not everyone experiences depression. Sometimes fertility treatment is short term and it works quicker than others. But if our default position can be, this is big, this is going to be a really emotive thing that a person could potentially be facing, I think that will really help. That will help the whole system to flow better and the individual to feel much better supported.
Absolutely. And I suppose from an employer's perspective, you know, they want to make themselves obviously look as attractive and be as attractive as possible to new incoming employees. It's increasingly the case that people are on the lookout for companies that actually do have a workplace policy in place for fertility issues, isn't it? They need to be assured that employers are not going to turn a blind eye to it. What kind of elements do you believe that a good workplace policy around fertility should include?
Flexible working, a commitment to be compassionate in this area and to be proactively looking at how to change that internal culture. So as I mentioned before, even those so-called little things like baby shower announcements via email, really starting to think about that. Flexible working, internal adjustments, reasonable adjustments, and just a commitment to learning as an organisation, a commitment to keep developing, staying in touch with us as an organisation so that we can keep upskilling. You know, we've worked with many organisations for a year, for 2 years now, and each time just helping to tweak something, to rethink one other of the ramifications. And I just think there's an ongoing commitment that can be there. And it starts with the policy. It starts with the internal training and the culture shift, but certainly flexible working and, you know, that support and compassionate awareness are the two key things, I would say.
So I'd just like to see, you know, what are your thoughts? Do you think that the UK is an exception at the moment in terms of how it's beginning to look at this topic and start to give it a higher prioritisation within HR, within the workplace? Or are you seeing that this is something that is also coming forward in other countries too?
Yeah, it is. It's starting to take shape in other countries. I think the States has done some great work on this. It's been, you know, often we follow their lead in terms of sort of the emotional savvy within workplaces, I think. And this is just one more example. I think there's been some great work in the States and Canada around this. But I do think the UK is starting to discuss this more. You know, it's in the media much more. People are coming and sharing their stories, and then we're seeing huge numbers come forward. So I think globally there is an increasing awareness. You know, infertility is a global phenomena. It's not down to one socioeconomic group. It's not down to mainly women. It's not down just to the West. You know, it's a global issue, and because of that, globally, workplaces will have to start thinking these things through.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting as well. You know, you say that it's not, obviously it's not a female only issue, but
no.
It certainly seems to be that people's awareness is that this is something that women will possibly want to bring forward within an organisation, or need to bring forward within an organisation, if they're actually undergoing physical treatment, where men may not necessarily bring that issue forward quite so readily. What kind of support would you recommend employers should have in place for men as well?
So as a charity, male support is so, so crucial to us, and we've really campaigned long and hard around this issue. It's really important. So we are really keen that workplaces support men in the same way that they support women. Right at the start of any training sessions I will address that myth that it is a female, white, middle class, certain background that experiences infertility. It's not. You know, actually, statistically, within the UK, slightly more men than women have got the initial reason for an infertility diagnosis. And yet the support is lacking for men. So we are really keen that one of the myths that we challenge is that infertility is a female issue. It's not. It affects men and women. And actually, in terms of the emotional repercussions, often we find it affects men just as deeply as women, but they're not the ones going through the bulk of the medicalized treatments. But actually, emotionally, they often are going through the same issues. But the sector and society has been skewed towards the female perspective. And so because of that, it's really important that in any training we do, we address that. It's really important that there's an awareness that men are affected within an organisation. It's crucial that any policy supports both men and women in terms of leave and support. And it's, again, that cultural shift is so vital. So we will support men, and we will find ways for organisations to better support men as well facing infertility. But it's certainly an area that we're really passionate about. And I often deliver training specifically around how best to support men going through fertility issues.
That's great to hear. So it's very much something which everybody has a relevancy to, and hopefully something which the whole of the organisation can relate to. That's been very, very useful, Anya. Thank you. Is there any particular message that you'd like to put forward to everyone before we close?
I think for me, I feel hopeful, as I've said. I think we've got a long way to go, but I think it's the next big workplace discussion that is happening and has to happen. And it affects everyone in terms of managers and employees. It's in everyone's best interest to really address this, really get the support in place. And please come and speak to us about how to do that, because we would love to help as many organisations to get it right as possible. And we'll find a way to help you.
So that brings us to the end of the podcast today. We hope you found it valuable. Don't forget that you can freely join our community and keep up to date with the very latest news, views and opinions on diversity, equity and inclusion in the workplace at our website, diversity-network.com. And of course, we'll be bringing you podcasts on a regular basis too. So till the next time, thanks for listening. Together, let's make it happen.